In New Brunswick, Indigenous apprentices quadrupled from approximately 44 to 120 in the last 5 or so years. Hi everyone, welcome back to the Build Your Future podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Shukwen, and today I have with me Nisa Kennedy, the Workforce Development Manager here at JEDI. I would like to first acknowledge that the JEDI office is located in the traditional unceded homeland of the Wolastoqiyik people. This homeland and all of New Brunswick are covered by the Treaties of Peace and Friendship, which Wolastoqiyik, Mi'kmaq, and Passamaquoddy peoples first signed with the British Crown in 1725. The treaties did not deal with surrender of lands and resources, but in fact recognized Wolastoqiyik, Mi'kmaq, and Passamaquoddy titles and establish the rules for what was to be an ongoing relationship between nations. So today we'll be discussing current barriers Indigenous peoples faced in the skilled trades, what's being done and what we think can be done to help make the industry more equitable for all. There are many reasons why we choose to discuss the skilled trades on this podcast, but mainly it's because this career path offers a unique opportunity to help Indigenous communities in several ways. And I'd just like to share a few of them here with you guys today. The first reason is economic empowerment and community development. We see that skilled trades provide well-paying jobs, they help reduce unemployment, and they help boost financial stability in Indigenous communities. In addition to this, tradespeople contribute to local infrastructure and economic growth, which helps create a cycle of community investment and development. Something else that we've noticed is the representation. Indigenous tradespeople inspire pride and representation, encouraging younger generations to pursue these careers if we see Indigenous tradespeople represented well within the skilled trades. Self-reliance and sustainability is another benefit that we see. In training Indigenous tradespeople, it helps to build capacity for communities to maintain and grow their infrastructure and help foster leadership opportunities for communities to become more self-sufficient. That's why it's important we examine the current barriers being faced today to understand where we need to improve in order to foster equity and inclusion in the industry and bring these opportunities forward for all people to benefit from. The four main barriers that we've noticed in the industry today are as follows. The first category is systematic challenges. Some of these things are lack of representation in the skilled trade, access to training programs, or institutional biases. What barriers have you noticed in the industry out there? Because I know you've worked in many different facets of the workforce industry.
Yeah, so I mean, and previously in my role as Provincial Indigenous Employment Coordinator, working primarily with the employment training officers and the communities, one of the barriers that's often brought up is, you know, the systemic challenges that arise when it comes to individuals, you know, accessing certain training programs because of, you know, where the educational institution is located, you know, how are they going to get there, all of their, you know, support system would then be not there for them.
Yeah.
You know, they're also going into a space sometimes where they themselves are the only Indigenous individual in the room or in the job site. So those things kind of, you know, create a situation where you may not feel as welcomed or maybe feel misunderstood, and you kind of end up being like, well, maybe this environment might not be what I want to do right now. But, you know, that's not the case all the time.
Yeah.
But those were some things, you know, that are brought up sometimes when it comes to, you know, the systemic challenges there, as well as, you know, maybe not having a mentor to be able to speak to. You know, how do you navigate certain processes when it comes to maybe apprenticeship or training and things like that?
Yeah.
But maybe we could talk a little bit more about, you know, the trade program and some ways to maybe be proactive in addressing some of that stuff.
Yeah, because you had mentioned, you know, access to Indigenous teachers and mentors, and we just previously had a cohort complete, and I mean, I'm pretty new to JEDI, but we had an Indigenous instructor, and it seemed to have, you know, quite a big improvement on the overall, you know, education and learning experience of the students because we had that mentorship and representation there.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was two things I think that really helped at that particular cohort, and I think it was, one, there being the Indigenous teacher to educate the students, but then also having, you know, a coordinator of the program within the community.
Yes.
That also was someone that they were more familiar with.
Yep.
I think provided, you know, that comfort of being able to explore something new, but also feeling that familiarity of it being one in the community, having someone that understands what it is like to be living within the Indigenous community,
yeah,
and also understanding what maybe the background is for those students as well. So maybe there's someone that, you know, they're not going to outwardly say, maybe they need other supports or resources in order to thrive in the program. But those are things that, you know, when you're in the community and you're aware of, you could be like, okay, maybe we should, you know, have a check-in with this particular student that maybe having some challenges and see how we can, you know, navigate that together.
Yeah.
And I think that really helped in that circumstance. And there was actually like 100% attendance rate with that one. And I mean, there's a multitude of factors with that, but yep. I think, you know.
And not to mention the program being, you know, free to start with. We offer like stipends, and this is like not in any way a promotion for the program, but in regards to, you know, accessing training programs, that's been an issue in the past. And, you know, this program being offered in that way with these, you know, we're trying to be culturally sensitive and, you know, looking at it from a person standpoint and less of an industry standpoint, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, but I think like being able to meet people where they are is very key in providing that support and really helping with building the confidence of individuals.
Yep.
Because, you know, everyone has these different things and circumstances that are happening, but, you know, once you're able to kind of meet them there, they're a little bit more confident in being able to navigate, you know, things as they go further. Doesn't mean you're going to have someone to support you in every single step of your life, but
right.
but it's like once you're able to kind of navigate it one time and know that there was someone there to support you, you're like, okay, now I can kind of figure out how to navigate these maybe a little bit better.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously the confidence in being able to complete a training program within your community, it helps kind of boost up that for maybe exploring other opportunities down the road.
Absolutely. Another thing that I've noticed as far as barriers are concerned is sometimes the location can be an issue. So sometimes participants or apprentices have limited access to you know, work terms or travel because of where they're located. You might not have a job site or a place to do your work term in that location. That definitely has an effect on, you know, retention in the trades, mm-hmm. and recruitment in general, right? Because I've known of people, you know, we've trained and they'd like to stay within their community, but unfortunately they just don't have the Red Seal people there in order to train them, right? So that transportation and location can be an issue sometimes.
Yeah, and I think that's where, you know, trying to, you know, support experienced skilled tradespeople too,
yeah.
in, you know, obtaining their Red Seal.
Yes.
Would also help with, you know, giving back to that next generation that's looking to enter into the skilled trades.
Absolutely.
Gaining that apprenticeship. So it kind of becomes this cycle, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it helps to see, you know, different training programs actually being offered within different communities and being able to essentially kind of go to them rather than getting people to leave and, you know, have to travel for X amount of hours or moving away from their community.
Right.
So I think there's been a huge movement towards flexibility when it comes to how learning and training is delivered.
Absolutely. And especially having things like the trades trailer that we have here at Jedi. And I know NBCC also has the Above and Beyond campaign that they do with their mobile training unit. Having things, you know, those options available, I mean, they're pretty new. We're seeing them pop up a little bit more and more as time goes on. But having access to those resources could be a good way down the road to maybe get certain trainings to more remote areas, right?
Yeah, and I think also a key thing is, you know, having conversations early on with communities too, and understanding maybe what community projects are happening, because, you know, it's really easy to potentially align, you know, training programs with maybe community projects where they are going to need tradespeople to work within that. So it's really important to have that collaboration with the communities as well, because then you're, you know, providing training, you're addressing maybe some geographical limitations, and still providing them with, you know, work placements, exploration to maybe a variety of different trades,
yeah,
as well as, you know, Red Seal tradespeople that could take them on and mentor them in that way.
Right. And you have to start somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. If you'd like to get this momentum going within your community and eventually have a certain number of Red Seal, you have to start somewhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, like when you're really getting familiar with different projects that are happening throughout the province and different communities, it gives an opportunity for individuals within the community as well to be able to meet different potential employers.
Yes.
So whether or not maybe they have a project going on locally at the time, it's a good way to start to build those connections for people too, that maybe in a month or two, maybe something ends up happening around there, but they're like, okay, I just met this person that was just finishing up certain trades program here, maybe that'll work out. So I think things, conversations like that are really key as well.
Yeah. But also, I mean, it's something that we've all struggled with if you've gone through any sort of training or education in any way. Financial constraints obviously are another huge barrier that we see all the time. Especially within the skilled trades, the costs that are associated with tools and travel and or tuition, depending on where you'd like to get your training, can all be burdens on people who are aspiring to be tradespeople. What sorts of things do you think that we could do or implement, or other people could, you know, maybe implement moving forward to try and combat that as much as we can?
Yeah, I think one thing that's really key is building collaboration and partnerships with community, but also companies, employers, because one thing too is that, you know, some employers or organizations or educational institutions, they may be able to assist with certain aspects or provide certain key areas of education or training. And then also, you know, organizations like JEDI, we have programming in place to offer, you know, trades programs with really no cost to a community.
Yeah.
But again, like even outside of JEDI, you know, there's ongoing conversations and, you know, participation when it comes to trying to find ways to kind of increase Indigenous representation within the skilled trades workforce.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, key things are having those conversations with a lot of different stakeholders to ensure that things are aligning in that way. So maybe it's that you do a training program in a community, and again, you find out that there's, you know, a certain company that's doing a big project. So finding out maybe what are the trades that they're requiring, so then you can kind of put a training program on that works with that, so
yeah,
that they could kind of be streamline right into a work placement and potentially career in that area.
Yeah, and that helps sustain the community in more than one way.
Exactly. And again, like one of the other things too is providing like wraparound supports for individuals that are participating in training programs. So whether that's, you know, travel stipends or some sort of subsidization with childcare access.
Yes.
Those things would be, have been really helpful for individuals as well.
Right. Because we're talking about, you know, trying to give apprentices the best shot at success that we can, right? Mm-hmm. We're not talking about these barriers in regards to how can we give special treatment, quote unquote, to certain people, right? We're just examining what things need to be changed and what we can do to kind of help make it more equitable for everyone. And I only note that because I've heard, you know, people being in the trades over the years mention things like, well, why are we trying to cater to a specific group of people, whether that be women or Indigenous people in the trades? And in, not in a necessarily negative way, but just a question, right? Mm-hmm. Why are we doing all of these things for these specific groups of people and not just everyone as a whole? And the reason why is these exact barriers that we're talking about today, right? They don't necessarily apply to everyone.
Exactly. And I think that it's really key to understand that there's a difference between equality and equity.
Yes.
And understanding that, yes, the lived experience or circumstances for each individual is going to be different, but why purposely put additional barriers in the way of people?
Absolutely.
I think the key is that everyone has the same opportunity and chance, regardless of maybe the group that they're a part of.
Right.
I think that is really key in understanding how to kind of navigate those barriers. And barrier, like some of these barriers here aren't, you know, solely only the Indigenous people.
Absolutely not. No.
You know, are challenged with. I think there's barriers across the board for many different people. But again, I think it's important that we just understand that, you know, it's to assist with those that already are having these barriers. So why make it more challenging for them to navigate those things?
And an important part that you mentioned in the difference between equality and equity, the main difference in regards to equity is being able to accommodate the differences that certain people may have, right? If it's almost like the example where there's a fence and we're all standing on a box, but we're not all the same height, right? Mm-hmm. So certain people might require certain helps or, you know, I'm not really sure the best word to use in this case, but some advantages in certain ways because they're already lacking in others, right? Mm-hmm. So the whole idea is just to make sure that we're all on the same playing ground. And sometimes for certain groups of people, that requires some different things than others.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a bad thing. And I think having conversations like this are important just so people are aware of what those struggles may be, because mm-hmm. not everyone knows, right?
Yeah, exactly.
In the trades, it's not something that I've heard people talk about as much, but I think it might be something interesting to discuss, that there may be, you know, some social and cultural challenges for being an Indigenous person in a, you know, predominantly one-way type workforce. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that that workforce is bad in any way. It's just to, is there room to open and expand and accept maybe a different type of thinking within the skilled trades? Or maybe is there a way for us to incorporate more traditional skilled trades activities or ways of thinking or approaches to the skilled trades within them today? Do you think there's room for that somewhere?
I think that's like a really loaded question.
I know. Welcome to the podcast.
I think one of the major misconceptions when it comes to when you talk about Indigenous perspectives or cultural identity in regards to really any industry is that wanting, you know, everything to be solely Indigenous focused, that's not the case.
Yep.
It's more so about just having cultural understanding,
yes,
that there's different ways of, you know, thinking or cultural practices and things like that. I think the other thing too is in order for even that understanding to be achieved, you know, that's where you have to start kind of unpacking a little bit of like, why are you having these misconceptions about different groups of people?
Right.
I think that's where, you know, it's key to, you know, have like unconscious bias education, yes. anti-racism education. And that's beyond even skilled trades. That's really for any industry.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that would be that first step in even being able to really understand the barriers that we were just discussing, right? Because it's like you first have to have that awareness that they even exist.
Yeah.
But really, I think it's not so much about, you know, Indigenous perspectives or traditions being integrated into every section of like skilled trades or anything like that.
Yep.
But one thing maybe to consider is like when there are, you know, projects that are happening, depending on where the location is, sometimes like, well, you're going to need to have, you know, those conversations with Indigenous communities. Is it, you know, a location that may have, you know, a cultural significance?
Absolutely.
You know, are there situations that are happening where, you know, that's actually adjacent to, you know, some culturally or ceremonial location? Like, there's things that maybe need to be considered in those project discussions at times. And, you know, I think in saying that again, like, there's when projects are happening, Indigenous communities also will know too, like, you know, what individuals in their communities could maybe be able to assist in, you know, whatever the project may be. If they already have, you know, Red Seal tradespeople within the community, like, you're already kind of building or bridging those gaps.
Yep.
But I think communication and early relationship building would be really key in, you know, that social and cultural understanding.
Right. In our most recent cohort, we had an elder come in on Fridays and speak with the students individually, and we've noticed that it had a significant impact on how they received their training and how they felt overall about how their apprenticeship was going, because they had that space to be able to talk about their feelings and experiences together. And I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, and I think also it's really important too, because one thing that we do have to be aware of is that when, you know, we are doing training programs within a community, you know, communities sometimes are experiencing, you know, grief or certain yeah. situations, so that ultimately can impact students and, you know, the success for them, because they're also trying to navigate some things that are happening outside of, you know, them just participating in the training program.
Right. Yep.
And I think, you know, when you're providing a space for them that's just for them to really talk about whatever it is that's going on, whether it's during the training program or external to that,
yep.
having that space with an elder has definitely shown that it's had a really positive impact for the students.
Yep.
And that, you know, I think is something key in when you're integrating cultural perspectives into programming and things like that, is identifying and allotting
yes.
time for that early on when planning projects like that and programs, because what we've seen is like it's very needed.
Yes, it is very needed. And honestly, the things that we're doing and these types of initiatives and, you know, approaching these situations with care, I think has, you know, I like to think that it's been working, because in the last few years, 5 or so years, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, the amount of apprentices that we've had in this province has quadrupled, Indigenous apprentices. And although the numbers may seem small to people who are not familiar with the industry numbers, you know, the number of apprentices quadrupling is a significant change in a period of 5 years. And I think it's important that we give credit to the initiatives that are working and the things that, you know, have made these things and projects successful. One of them is, you know, partnerships that we have through our organization and otherwise. For example, you know, as you know, we have the Jedi Trades trailer. When that opened, Milwaukee was actually, you know, nice enough to donate a lot of power tools and, you know, outfitted the trailer for us. So that type of support is wonderful. Mm-hmm. We've recently, you know, had the skills competition in the fall in partnership with Skills NB and NBCC. And, you know, we had the graduates of some of our cohorts come together and have graduation and then participate in a skills competition. Wonderful, wasn't it?
It was wonderful. And I think, you know, that is like a perfect example of when you're bringing so many different groups and organizations and communities together. Because at the end of the day, it's all to support the students.
Yep.
And, you know, there was multiple communities that were involved with that. There was, you know, Jedi, but there was also the skills Skills New Brunswick and NBCC.
Yep.
Everyone working together to, you know, create that. And just seeing, you know, the students' pride and excitement on the day was super cool.
It was.
And one thing that I thought was, like, just really, I don't know, awesome to witness was watching one of the students get really, like, frustrated during the skills competition.
Because it's a little stressful. Like, we've seen these competitions.
I mean, I couldn't do it. But it was so interesting and really cool to just kind of watch this, like, magic moment. But where that one student was getting really frustrated and the Indigenous instructor that we were speaking about earlier, he just made eye contact with them and just knew and just, like,
And the stars aligned in the moment.
And he just knew that he needed to, like, just be there with them for a minute.
Yep.
And, you know, he just kind of, like, talked him down through that frustration he was having. And he was able to kind of move out of, like, his head in that situation.
Yep.
And just, like, power through with the skills competition. And I was like, that is such a perfect example as to why you need to have, you know,
those connections and those relationships and to place an emphasis on that importance.
Yeah, and I was just like, what a magic moment. I love that.
I mean, this is what we do it for.
Skills for success. But I'll talk about that for, like, ever, because it was just really cool to witness.
But it was amazing to do it, like, as you say, like a community event, and just to hear the feedback, you know, we'd love to do this again in the future. Yeah. We'd love to see you guys do this again. And it was so nice just to have everyone together. And I know that sounds like a cliche, but it just really was a super fun experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And everyone, I think, came from it, I think, from what I hear anyway, you know, with a really positive experience.
Yeah, and I think it was just a really friendly competition in general. Like, everyone was really checking out what everyone else was doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, some individuals were able to take the materials that they were working on during the skills competition and finished it off afterwards on their own, because they were just like, I loved this. So, I think building that confidence is so key when doing programs and initiatives like that. And it really can't be done by just one sole organization or group. It's so important that, you know, you have all of these people working together to ensure that it's done, and done, like, in a good way.
Right. And so those are definitely a few organizations that are known to support Indigenous, you know, things that are happening in the skilled trades in general. I wonder, like, what other industries and maybe other policymakers can do to support Indigenous participation? Because we hear of a few groups, right? But if we're looking to, you know, break down these barriers and advance Indigenous people in the skilled trades in any way, I wonder what some changes that we can make.
Yeah, and I think we kind of talked about it a little bit before when it comes to, you know, the being flexible with how you deliver training or education programs.
Yep, that definitely is a good one to start with.
And, you know, supporting initiatives. And it can be, you know, in different ways. It doesn't always have to be, you know, some sort of, like, financial contribution.
It can
be, you know, providing maybe, you know, a network of key employers that would be working on local projects, you know, assisting with, you know, navigating different areas of the skilled trades, whether it's apprenticeship or other additional trainings and things like that. Again, it's just really having those early conversations and building relationships is really important for, you know, any industry, really.
The first step is reaching out, basically wanting to make the change,
You don't know until you know, so.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's really where it's key. And then obviously, you know, we talked about, you know, cultural awareness training and things like that.
I think,
like,
that's a big one.
And it has to be more than just, you know,
Taking a course.
Yeah. Like, it's an ongoing, journey of education when it comes to working with any underrepresented group.
Absolutely.
And really being intentional and genuine with it as well.
Yes. Yes. Also, you know, I know you had mentioned nothing, it doesn't all have to be financial, but it certainly would help, right? I mean, just, you know, financially maybe supporting mobile training units, or maybe offering some scholarships of some sort, maybe, or even more cultural inclusion in the curriculum could be a good change to make, right? Other things could be, you know, we had mentioned before, just local employment opportunities, you know, consider Indigenous communities, you know, consider, you know, where you would like to build, and is there a place here for maybe some Indigenous apprentices, right? We obviously want to avoid tokenism, and we obviously don't want Indigenous people just to be hired as part of a diversity group hire. You know, you should, you know, always be hired based on your skills and how you show up to the workforce.
I think, and it's important to kind of look at, like, the forecast of what's happening over the next few years. Like, if you know, like, say this project is going to be happening in a few years' time, where you're going to need X amount of tradespeople in this particular skilled trade, figuring out kind of where the gaps are for, you know, the workforce, the labor market in that, and then also seeing, you know, are there already, you know, training facilities in some communities? Some have that.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, could you, you know, be able to support in some way that, where you're helping to train individuals that then would be key individuals for hiring for this project that's down the road?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like
a give and take.
Yeah. And so it's, again, it goes back to having those conversations and being able to kind of look at the future, not like just the right now.
Yeah.
You know, it's no secret that a lot of tradespeople are retiring.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's looking like there's going to be a high need, and there currently is, of skilled trades workers. So, you know, these are those conversations where it's like, okay, how many people do you need in this particular trade?
It's like, help me help you.
Yeah.
Right? We're here. We'd like to, you know, we want to be trained. So all you need to do is invest in the resources for people to be trained. And obviously, this is not specifically for Indigenous people. This applies to all apprentices because of the huge demand there are for apprentices, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Any support that apprentices or training for the skilled trades in general is a plus, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's really just having the conversation, what's going on? I think sometimes it's just like, just establishing it is really that first step, and then all of that stuff's kind of come into play. But I think it's just really understanding what's going on in the communities, local projects, and, you know, having that awareness and understanding as well to what the circumstances or lived experience is going to be in those communities.
Awesome. I couldn't agree more. I think today we've definitely discussed how the skilled trades hold an incredible potential to empower Indigenous communities, help foster representation, and maybe build long-term self-reliance within communities. I think realizing these opportunities means addressing the barriers that we've highlighted together. We can encourage everyone to listen and maybe act. For individuals, maybe consider how you can support Indigenous tradespeople in your own workplace or community. Try to advocate for inclusive practices, mentorship opportunities, and some cultural awareness. For organizations, maybe try partner with Indigenous-led initiatives like JEDI. Invest in programs like our three orientation program, and explore how you can make training and employment opportunities more accessible. And for policymakers, push for policies that prioritize equity in the skilled trades. Fund mobile training units, increase scholarships and financial supports for Indigenous apprentices. It can only benefit our nation and economy as a whole in the end anyway. It can only do good. The skilled trades are a path towards a stronger, more inclusive future, not just for Indigenous people, but for all of us. So let's work together to break down barriers and build opportunities. I just want to thank my guest, Nisa Kennedy, for joining us today on the Build Your Future podcast, and most importantly, all of you. And if you found this episode meaningful, please share it with your network, and don't forget to tune in next time as we continue to explore the intersection of Indigenous communities and the trades. Lalin, and see you next time.